To start recording, there we go. Thanks everybody for joining us here today. My name is John Hutchinson with Traders Reserve. I am the emergency fill-in for the 6 o'clock block. So I'm going to give you a plan based on what we've been doing at in our services in our trading. If you're not familiar with us, Traders Reserve, we are 99% of what we do is selling options, selling premium. Single-sided spreads, advanced tactics, but we are largely focused on generating income from our trades. So we're not necessarily betting directionally. And what I'm going to be sharing with you today are from the breadth of presentations you've been enjoying over the last couple of days, 3 days, I believe it is. You've probably been immersed in everything from controlling emotions, controlling your trading. The discipline aspect or the disciplinary aspects of trading. And I'm going to give you a bit of a different view. And some of this will be, and I'll kind of apologize for it, but I want you to enjoy it. A little bit of a more fundamental and raw view of kind of where we are. So to begin, I want to go back to a recent webinar that we held with our own people and using discourse, where one of the attendees said, well, you know, how does your strategy work in a bear market? This is 2 days ago. And my answer was, you're in one. So that's how it works in a bear market. What you should be asking is, how does it work in a bull market? Because we're not in a bull market yet. We will be soon, but not yet. And the point here to draw is fundamentally know where you are in an economic cycle, in a market cycle, in a stocks cycle, because right now, that's what's driving the market. And we can look back at yesterday's Fed announcement, and you can deduce whatever you'd like to deduce from that. But the underlying problem we all face, whether we're investors or traders, and much of my presentation here is geared toward both of you, whether you're a long-term investor, short-term trader, options trader, stock investor, doesn't matter. I have things for everybody here, to call it a buffet, if you'd like. We need to know where we are. And where we are is not a comfortable place. In our services, we are consistently telling our members that the market is still unstable, and I'll show you why. That I would not trust the recent bullish rallies, and I'll show you why. And there are steps that we need to take as traders to protect ourselves while still being able to generate income, in our case, or if you're an investor, be able to find stocks that you can add to your portfolio. So I want to start by talking about what I'll call curveballs. And there are two primary yield curves. Most everybody focuses on the 10-2 yield curve, the 10-2 spread, and as a recession predictor. Well, it's been predicting a recession since last year. We're now coming up on the 12th month. And typically when the yield curve inverts, it's anywhere from 6 to 18 months. So according to that indicator, we have 6 months left. The second one is a little more interesting. This is, to me, and it is a short-term yield curve. It's comparing the 3 month to 2 year spread. And when this curve inverts, it typically predicts rate cuts. So over the last several months, those of you who follow financial information have likely heard that the expectation of the stock market's participants is that the Fed is going to turn to a rate cutting cycle. And there were multiple inversions on this particular curve, which changed when the Fed might cut rates. But the problem we have as traders is, why would the Fed cut rates? And that brings us back to the yield curve, the 10-2's yield curve, which is potential for recession. Why I draw this point and why I'm starting here is we're not in a safe place in the market. We just saw the market go through basically half day yesterday and a full day today, selling off on the Fed's news, on, you can call it, the regional banking crisis, topic du jour. But the reality is, over the last several weeks, the market has been bouncing off 4,200 on the S&P 500, has not broken through. That's an important lesson. That's where we are now. And the risk in the market, and I'll show you this, is largely to the downside. And what these are creating are what we'll call an economic paradox, meaning in order to get rate cuts, we need, according to this, we need to have a recession. But we haven't had a recession. And the problem and the reason that we haven't had a recession yet is two reasons, actually: the state of the economy and the consumer. And we'll start with a quick look at the state of the economy. By most measurements, the table here is covering five key reports that we follow: ISM manufacturing, ISM services, and we generally follow these just on a quarterly basis. The month-to-month movements don't necessarily tell us a lot, but the quarterly movements can. And what we see between both manufacturing and services is a slowing in the economy. Manufacturing has been in contraction for several months. Services has not. So there's a split view. It's the jobs. Everybody probably knows the jobs reports are driving the market every month. We have had a slowing in job gains, but it's only been one single month in April, and yet jobs are still positive. So it's still positive addition. The number one concern for the Federal Reserve over the last 12 months was slowing the labor market. Well, they haven't really accomplished that yet, but there are signs that they are beginning to. Job losses on a weekly basis have spiked recently, still sitting between 230 and 245. Retail sales, a measurement of consumer spending, flat to positive, but still positive. The last one is spending non-defense capital goods, aircraft, a measurement of business spending, flat. So businesses are still spending as much as they did 3 months ago. And at the same time, the underlying problem with inflation, it's still high, it's flattening out. It has not reached the federal, it's not even close to the Fed's target of 2%. And it's not going to get there anytime soon, which means we still have the Federal Reserve's higher for longer interest rates, regardless of what they said yesterday. And the Fed has not yet paused raising rates because they just raised them yesterday. So the June meeting now more important and will dictate kind of the summer in the markets. But what the Fed is really having a problem with is what I call the resilient consumer. And my analogy here, just for fun, is the urban legend of the frog in water, right? Take a pot of boiling water, put the frog in, frog jumps out. Put them in cold water, turn up the heat, frog boils to death, allegedly. No frogs were used or harmed in this presentation. Are consumers now conditioned to higher prices? And if consumers are conditioned to higher prices, then they have not stopped spending. They have not significantly cut spending. One area that you can look at, and I didn't put this in the presentation because it's germane detail, but one area you can watch is travel. People have been spending more money on travel over the last 2 years, in part because psychologically, they want to catch up from the lost travel during the pandemic months and the 2020 to 2021. So on a discretionary spending, people are still spending a lot of money on travel. I mean, every time I get on a plane, they're full. Go to the airport, it's packed. Try to get a rental car or a hotel, it's tough. Those are indications that consumers are still spending money on what you'll call luxury travel or fun travel. They're not cutting back. And that's the biggest headwind for the Fed. So the paradox here is everyone's expecting a recession. Much of the measurements are moving toward recession. We're not in one yet. I'm not telling you we're going to be in one, but consumers are not participating in that drive to a recession, which means that higher for longer interest rates, the underlying or underpinning fundamentals of the stock market right now haven't changed dramatically enough for either a significant move higher from where we currently are or a significant move lower from where we are until we start to look ahead. And so here's another paradox that we found, which is if by and large, all of the major talking heads are predicting a recession, recession is coming. Why is the market suddenly predicting nearly 7% growth for 2024 in S&P 500 earnings, which is precisely what the projection is right now? So current earnings for 2023 are projected at 225. Early projections for 2024 are 240, which would be the equivalent of about 6.7% growth in earnings year to year. Those 2024 earnings are important because that's what starts to get priced into the S&P 500, the other indexes, beginning in June. The market's always pricing in 6 to 12 months ahead. So by the time we hit June, by and large, the market no longer cares about 2023 earnings. They're going to be focused on 2024 earnings. And what I've laid out for you here, and the next slide will be a little cleaner view of something. Market is generally trading between around an 18.5 forward multiple. So take earnings of 225, multiply by 18 and a half, and you'll get roughly where we are in the S&P 500. Typically in a recession, you're going to be down near 16 times forward earnings, maybe as low as 15 times historically. We're not there yet. We're not at that point. But when we look at these projections against the S&P 500, this is a weekly chart of the S&P 500. Where's the upside? We see far more risk to the downside for sure, but there's no conduit to push us higher. Part of the reason for taking you through all of this is we had significant difficulties last year in even trading options with the rapid sell-offs that bloomed in the early part of the year, January to February, again in March, again in June, certainly, August to September, September into October. And it required us to undergo tactical evaluation and change it. And I'll show you what some of the things that we did here in a moment. But the reason I make that point along with this slide is we're at another one of those inflection points. And if you can take everything that you've learned over the last few days and apply it just to this view, you are better prepared for what may happen in the weeks and months ahead. And that's where I'm trying to get to. This underlying paradox of the market is there's no upside. Even moving from where we finished today, which was roughly 40-70 on the S&P 500, you're talking about 5% to the upside for 2024 earnings at 18 times at an 18x multiple. In other words, the market's already fairly priced for next year. So there's an underlying problem because how do you get to a bull market if the market has already priced forward to next year based on current valuations? So something has to change, and that maybe that change happens this summer, maybe it happens this fall, but that brings us all the way back to the issues of recessions and rate cuts. Remember, or at least write it down and remember, when the Federal Reserve cuts interest rates, it is generally perceived as a negative for the S&P 500. The early months following a rate cut, the S&P 500 historically is negative, up to the first year following rate cuts. So on one hand, the market wants these rate cuts. And on the other hand, we also know that historically they sell off during those rate cuts. Another paradox. So taking a look holistically at sort of this view of the fundamentals behind what's happening in the market, this issue of, well, how does the market go higher? Or how can we adjust and apply our trading? I've brought some ideas for you today. So I want to start with traders. That's what we do. That's who we are. And I'm going to take you through just a couple of things tactically, which we've been applying to our options trading. The first is, as I mentioned, we had a really difficult time last year, especially in the June collapse, which formed the first low in the S&P 500. And at that time, to put this in a little bit of context, what we were largely trading were trades which had 14 to 28 day duration. Not unreasonable given the market prior to June, certainly tradable, but it was those types of tactics, and there were a variety of them, which started to fail following the June collapse, which forced us to change our perspective and to a degree our tactic. What we changed was the timing of the tactic, and we began moving to more short duration tactics, meaning trading options that have that were anywhere from 5 to 14 day to expiration trades. So compressing our time in the market, reducing our risk in short-term and medium-term moves in the S&P 500. But we also took some other steps, and I'll share with you the sort of the overview of how these can work together. First is we started to reduce capital allocation. Excuse me, it doesn't help you when you've already lost money. Let's be fair about that. But the lesson when you have undergone a significant series of losses, which we did, is to take a step back and say, okay, I know I'm not going to make it all back at once, but how can I make it back slowly? And what we found, just one, by reducing capital allocation, and the second bullet point, trading what worked, and which we've continued to do, allowed us to recover from June in the ensuing months. So we took a beating in June, we recovered in July and August, we took another beating because why not in September into October, recovered again in or through November and December. If I took that 6 months of sort of like a full trading record across everything that we were doing, we were roughly flat over those 6 months. So we lost money heavily in June. By the end of the year, we had made it back to about break even just by following these little rules. When I say trade what works, I mean avoiding the shiny symbol syndrome. That's, you know, stock of the day, you know, hot topic or hot idea of the day or the week or the month or the year. It's trading what works. For example, on our end is we've been trading relentlessly the SPX. We've been trading relentlessly the XBI and other symbols or ETFs or indexes or index ETFs or individual stocks, which have consistently performed. And we just keep going back to the well. Now, we don't necessarily trade them every single week, but we have stuck with those symbols, those stocks and other assets, which have consistently performed. They don't have to be moving up. They don't have to be directional, but they have been consistent in generating income for us, which is our objective, our goal. The second thing, and I'll show you a slide on this in a moment, is we've also started working to combine tactics on the same simple as part of the capital allocation reduction. So for example, selling two puts, two single-sided puts on a $100 stock would require $20,000 in capital. If I can keep that capital lower than that, but generate more income from the trade on a percentage basis and do it in less time, now what I'm doing is accelerating the profit-taking time, using a slightly more aggressive time frame, but I'm also reducing my overall capital exposure. That's what I mean by combining tactics on the same symbol. We've also used more short duration tactics. We've been teaching this. In fact, we're beginning to teach this more frequently, which is 0 and 1 DTE options trades. That is for people who are willing to go a more of a day trading route. That's not for everybody. But the purpose behind that is there are tactics which work in very, very short term time frames without having to use them every single day. And that's what we're largely focused on. They're more supplementary short-term tactics, but we've been using trades that generally last anywhere from 4 to 5 days to get in and out as quickly as possible. In part because we know that at some point, market may break, may pull back another 5 or 7 or 10%. And we don't want to get caught like we did last year in one of those downdrafts. So these are some of the overarching tactics that we have taken on. We have spent more time focusing on index and index ETFs, largely because of their liquidity, their availability, the premium that's available, and certainly the tradability of those issues. We've done a little bit less focus on individual stocks, in part because individual stocks have been much more volatile than the overall index. I mean, the index is still volatile, but it is not uncommon to see significant lower moves lower in individual stocks, more so than the overall index. So that's part of why we started to make that shift as a step in, we'll call it trade correction. It's like being in trade prison, right? So this bear market, we got to write the number of days down on with a stone on the wall and figure out how soon we can get out of bear jail. In order to do that, we have to have tactics that work. So one of the things that we've done with our spread tactics, where we're using, whether it's iron condors, butterflies, or other advanced tactics, is avoiding the static or standard approach, meaning a 5 wide or a 10 wide. We've started using one tactic where we can go 100 wide and generate reasonable and realistic income. We also have manipulated the widths of our spreads, meaning if we have more of a bearish tilt or a bullish tilt or a directional tilt on a particular stock, index, or ETF, we can weight the spread to the higher or lower side to protect and profit. These are tactics that can be learned, but the whole of this is frankly what's rescued our trading in the last 12 months. And I want to go back to the combining tactics on the same symbol and give you an example of what I mean by that. This is actually a trade that's live kind of right now. These are recommendations we made between this morning and this afternoon in a couple of our different services. So I'm putting them together to show you what I mean by that. And this is the XBI, something we have traded successfully throughout this year. One of our favorite little places to trade right now. And what I mean by combining tactics is, and let's take a step back and assume that maybe we have a trading portfolio or a trading account, $150,000 or so. What I certainly don't want is too much capital exposure to any one position or any one trade. What I also want is to maximize the income from any individual position where reasonably possible. So here's a way to do that, a way that we're doing it, and that is to combine a single put with a spread. In this case, a put spread, selling a single-sided put and a put spread along with it, but trading them separately. We're technically trading them in separate accounts. And in this case, an 80.5 strike on the put. You can see the put spread there, 5 wide for that particular spread. And ultimately what this does is it essentially allows us to control the equivalent of 600 shares for combined capital of a little over $10,000. But the income return for us in approximately 8 days or less is 5%. And if I can do that consistently week to week to week, that adds up. This is exactly the kind of process we used to recover from losses last summer by looking at more ways to utilize tactics in tandem or collectively or even consecutively. Now, a couple of quick points. One of the things that I like about this, the separation of this, is anyone who's ever traded spreads knows the risk in spreads is win, 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 big loss, wipes out all the profit from the previous trades. So one of the ways that this helps us is, and on the single-sided put, excuse me, let me go back to that. Obviously, the underlying risk on the single-sided put is assignment and the stock going down more than, or the ETF in this case, going down any more than anything else. But the single-sided put allows me to roll that trade forward, strike to strike, expiration to different expiration, up or down in strikes. It gives me more flexibility in how I use that particular $8,000 in capital going forward to continue generating income. The put spread, I can continue to adjust, or I can add legs to it. In other words, I have other tactics that I can apply to that individual put spread if it moves against me. Hasn't yet. We just put these trades on. Don't know how they'll work out. Don't promise anything on that end. But what I'm after here is, what's the best use of my capital? What indexes, index ETFs, what ETFs, what stocks? Where am I consistently generating my money from? And focus your tactics and your trading in that direction. That's an example of how we're applying this and how we're using it. So overall, a 5% return would be nice in that period of time. In 8 days or less, generally our trades are running about 5 days, putting these types of tactics together. We are not typically targeting full premium. As I noted on the back here with accelerated profit taking, we're generally looking at 50 to 70% of initial premium, because what we've seen is a shift in Thursday and Friday trade or trading, where you could have an options trade running just fine Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and even most of Thursday, but you get to the end of Thursday or the beginning of Friday and all of a sudden it turns against you. So again, we don't need to sit and take 100% of the profit on a or premium on a sold option, because we know we can just take what we have and replicate the trade. So this is one of the steps that we've been taking for capital efficiency. So here I can, you know, if I wanted to sell two puts on the XPI, that would be $16,000 in capital. If I wanted, I could certainly sell or make more spread trades. I could increase the contract size to 10 or 20, but then that loss factor starts to rack up. And that's one of the things that we want to avoid. So by looking at how can I combine tactics on individual positions and have different structures to those trades that give me more protection, especially to the downside, then that's a way to focus your trading to protect your money and still generate income and or profit. In our case, on the selling side, one other thing that we've been doing that I want to share with you, and there's not a specific model to do this for yourselves, but it shouldn't be that difficult to do. If you have a trading tactic or strategy that you are using consistent, forward project what that could do in the next 12 months based on the number of trades that you've made, your actual number of wins and losses, generate a winning percentage, and then project that out over X number of trades or X number of weeks. So in this example, in the top left here, I'm going to get my little pen, my squiggly pen out here. So let me make sure that that's going to work. So this particular tactic that I'm sharing with you, we've traded 28 times. You can see we have an 85% win rate. So what that allows me to do is to say, if I made this trade just once per week, right, 52 times, this is what I can expect in terms of wins and losses. Now, on this side over here, I'm borrowing from this table, the average gain and average loss. So I've put that in here and here on the left side, and then multiplied by the number of wins and losses I anticipate for this. What I'm after is this number right here. What is this? What does this project to over a full year of just this one tactic, right? I'm not doing this across my entire portfolio. I'm just using this on a single tactic or a single strategy so that I know what my potential return or my potential income is or my potential gain using that strategy long-term. And by doing so, I can also say, well, what if I want to get crazy? I can go to 5 or 10 contracts and future cast that out, right? In this particular case, I have a profitable strategy. This kind of approach of modeling your projections forward is also dynamic. It will change as you continue to generate results. So as you get more winning trades or as you get more losing trades, this will continue to modify or alter the number. If your averages go up or down, this can live in a forward projecting environment. So that's one of the things that we started doing with our traders is to say, look at this in the forward. It's not a promise. It's not a guarantee. It's a projection, but you can't make decisions about which tactics are going to best serve you if you don't know how they can serve you and what the outcome potentially can be. I have another model that I'll share with you those of you who are investors in the next section of this presentation. Excuse me. The last thing that I'll share with you is this is an example of a tactic which comes back to the idea of trading faster, taking profits off the table sooner, not exposing ourselves to the market for a long period of time. So in the lower right here, this is literally the effect of a rapid profit taking approach. It's related to the performance view directly above. But what you should notice right away is the majority of the profit or income from this particular strategy has occurred within 3 to 4 days in the trade. And that performance has gotten worse as we've been in the trade longer. If you look at your own trading in this way, once again, what it can help you to find is what is the best possible day or best possible outcome for a particular trade or particular strategy. It may be longer, it may be shorter. It will be different for different tactics you may be using. But the idea here is to say, where am I making my money? And how can I best use the capital I'm putting into the market to generate a positive return longer term? For investors, I told you we have a different model. So let's move on to you. But traders can use this too. And I talked a little bit briefly about avoiding shiny symbol syndrome, meaning chasing hot stocks just because everyone's talking about them or just because they're hot. So one area that I would strongly suggest everybody focus on are these 7 sectors in the tech market. These are the areas where when the market stabilizes and when we do make that shift finally from bear to bull, when we get out of bear jail, these are the 7 sectors where I believe you'll find some stocks with significant growth potential, especially if you're a long-term investor, if you have a 2 to 5 year or longer time horizon. This is where you want to go hunting. I think it was last week, we were following along a friend of ours in the markets who said and told us rather that I think it's 7 stocks accounting for all of the S&P 500's growth this year or returns this year. So that means 490 plus stocks are net negative for the year. At some point, that's going to change. And you can find these, whether they're on the S&P or the Qs or the Russell, a range of stocks from small caps to mid caps to large caps that have significant long-term appreciation and even over here, short-term appreciation. I'm going to show you a path to valuing these stocks in sort of like a rapid but slow motion. So bear with me and I'll take you through the entirety of a process here that we... Okay, come on. There you go. 4 parts to the investing fundamental analysis. And I share this with you for a couple of reasons. When you're in a bear market, the last thing you want to do is put new money to work for if you're a long-term investor, right? You're waiting for the bottom. You're waiting for that signal that says bull market. One of the best uses of your time is fundamental research to know which stocks or to have at the ready stocks that you do want to invest in when the market is more stable, or when economic conditions do improve, or when the all clear sounds from the tornado siren, all right, in the media. This simple process, it looks complicated just because I had to make a fancy slide. This is a simple process. At the very top, I'm looking at the current price to earnings ratio simply from a valuation perspective. Is it undervalued? Is it fair value? Is it growth, or is it momentum? And the different structures there, whether it's a PE of 12 or 50 or 200, tells me what type of stock, how the market views the stock at present. If I look at a forward price to earnings ratio, which is simply taking future earnings divided by current price, then I can see whether or not anything changes in the market's future view, right? Does a stock change from a momentum to fair value, or from growth to undervalue? And largely what I'm looking for are stocks that are trading at a discount to future earnings, because that means I'm getting in at a better price, or at least I have the prospect of getting in at a better price. Then I'm looking at the five-year EPS, earnings per share, and I'm looking for stocks that have 10% or higher growth rates. The underlying average for the S&P 500 is 7 to 7.5%. So anything above that is essentially beating the average. Very high is 25%. Generally, I'll find most stocks that are in the 12 to 18% range being realistic, meaning they're actually going to perform at those types of long-term numbers. And then finally, one thing that I'd look at as a safety valve are PEG ratio. I won't go into that here because it's not critical to what I'm really trying to share with you. But PEG ratios are simply that price to earnings growth ratio. And the lower the PEG ratio, generally, the better the stock's long-term prospects for growth in the stock price. High growth targets are above 3 and above, and value targets are at 2 or less. So, but I want to share with you the simple math process to finding those next great stocks. We should be able to do this in about the last 15 minutes, so we're not pulling it all. This is a screenshot from Yahoo Finance. I'm using that because anyone can access it. You can find the information that you need on just about every stock in the stock market. The stock that I've been working with, or that I'm working with here, is Lattice Semiconductor. While this is an out-of-date screenshot from January of this year for a presentation I delivered back in February, the process is what matters, because at the end of this, I will take you through live action and update the numbers and the process that we're about to walk through. So we'll follow along on the process, because that's the part that matters. And the first thing that I'm looking for is the analysis tab in Yahoo. So what I'm after is the earnings and earnings projections for the stock and the growth rate in the stock. And to find that, okay, just one of those days. To find that in that analysis tab, I can start up toward the top. You'll see earnings estimates. And I usually just use the average estimate. I'm not going to worry about low or high unless there's some really weird, crazy spread between them. But all I want to know is, what are the current year earnings estimates? And then what is next year? What does next year look like? For this underlying purpose, what I'm showing you today, I'm just going to focus on the current year earnings and show you how to forecast the long-term growth prospects in price of a stock. So we're going to keep that 175 on hand for a minute. And the second piece that I need here is the EPS growth rate, which again is on that same analysis tab. I'll show you this live in just a minute. But all the way toward the bottom, you can see the next 5 years, 15%. So this company is expected to grow earnings by 15% per year over the next 5 years. That's a pretty strong growth rate. So the next question I have is this a stock that I want to own? What's the long-term prospect of owning the stock? And remember, it's a projection. It's not a guarantee. But if without that information, you're guessing, right? You don't have a fundamental or a valuation reason to buy or own a stock, or even to put it on your watch list. So one way that I do this, so again, we have our $1.75 earnings and our 15% growth rate, is to simply multiply the current year earnings by that growth rate to not only get next year's earning, but to actually calculate forward 5 years of earnings and what that does to the stock price. So in this instance, I can take 175, that's current year earnings, times 1.15, that's the growth rate, 15%. And that gives me next year's earnings of $2.02, which I can back check here and see that I'm within a penny of what Yahoo has as their estimate. So I know I'm doing the math right. Then I can take next year's earnings and multiply it by the current PE ratio. So let me go back for a second here. Now their PE ratio is based on last four quarters. The way that I'm calculating it, I show you here, I'm taking the current price divided by the current year earnings of $1.75, which gives me a 43. I think that was rounded up. So I rounded it back down to 42. So then I'm multiplying my earnings times 42 forward PE, excuse me, current PE. That gives me a stock price of $84.84. In other words, at the time that I did this earlier this year, that was the projection for this year, $84.84. So about $9 or a little bit above 10% growth in the stock. Then I can repeat this though for years 2 through 5. I'm simply sticking with that 42 ratio for the price to earnings because I don't have any better information to work with if and when things change, i.e. quarterly earnings, earnings estimates, the company blows up or has some kind of thing happen, right? I can remodel this as needed. But what this is telling me is that based on that 15% EPS growth rate, this stock should in 5 years be worth about $148 per share. That's what this modeling is doing. So now what I'm asking myself is this a stock that I want to own? And all I've done here is simply replicated the math year to year to year across 5 years. And once I have that, once I have this kind of a forward projection, then I can make better decisions about whether or not I want to use this stock in my portfolio. But I can take another step and say, how would I use it in my portfolio? So here's an example, returns and projection. If the current price is $75.59, forward price 5 years from now projected at $148, that's a long-term return of 97% or an annual growth rate of 19.4%. That's pretty good. If I put it in a portfolio, let's say it's a $50,000 portfolio and I want to allocate no more than 5% to any one stock in my portfolio, then my investment value is a maximum of $2,500. And that tells me that at current prices, I can buy 33 shares. And those 33 shares multiplied by this 148 give me a long-term value of $4,906. So I can see what my growth is from 2,500 to almost 5,000. I'm nearly doubling my investment. Now, one thing to keep in mind, we'll go backwards here. Give me a second, because obviously this thing doesn't like me today. One thing to keep in mind is, although I'm projecting out 5 years, the one thing I know is that if this company is hitting or beating those earnings, Wall Street will pull forward their price projection. So for example, and hypothetically, if their earnings next year are not $2.02, but instead they're $2.50, well, that price isn't going to be $85. That price is going to be well over 100. Wall Street is going to start to pull these numbers forward 6 to 12 months. So the acceleration in the growth of this stock will occur sooner than the 5 years that I'm projecting. That's my goal. That's my objective, is to find those stocks where Wall Street can pull those prices forward. But before I can find those stocks, I have to know whether or not they even qualify for that. And that's what I'm doing here with a little bit of the fundamental analysis and basic math. Nothing tricky or hard here. So let's practice. We've got about 10 minutes. So let's practice in real time. I need to stop sharing and reshare. So just bear with me for a second. So we should see Yahoo. Here's Lattice Semiconductor. You can see $81.37 is the current price. So up $6 roughly since I originally did this analysis. One thing that I want, and I'm just using a Yahoo chart to do this for right now. So a little forgiveness, please. This is a five-year chart. What I'm looking for is long-term support in the stock. And I can see based on this line, based on this line of candles here, going all the way back to 2020 and into 2019, that long-term support is right around $48. So I'm going to keep that number on hand for a second. I'll show you how to use it in just a moment. But we want to remember 48 as our long-term support line. Now I'm going to go to the analysis tab, and I can see that current year earnings for this year are now $2.07. So if you recall, when I just did this, they were lower than that. So these earnings now for 2023 are higher than the ones I was using in January, as are the next year earnings. So you see how there's suddenly been an increase in the earnings expectations behind this stock. We'll see what the impact of that is in just a minute. So what I'm looking at are these two numbers here, the 207 and 244. Not easy to highlight. Sorry about that. So average estimates this year and next year. So I can see that those have already changed. The other thing I could see is consistent sales growth. Great, good, not critical, but helpful. But down here, my next year, next 5 years is still sitting at 15%. This is the number that I want. So I now have the things that I need, and I'll show you how I'm calculating all this out. I have the things that I need to future cast or forward project this particular stock. And to do that, I'm going to share a different screen with you. So hang on just a second. And all right, this is a model that I'm building. It's based on a spreadsheet that I built. So I'm everything will fill in as I start to build in numbers here. So first we have the current price, which is $81.37. We have earnings current year, $2.07. We have a growth rate of 15%, and we have long-term support of $48. What this table has now done is changed all of its forward metrics. Note that the PE ratio is actually a little bit lower than the one I was using earlier last year, but the price projection is actually a little bit higher. The rate of change is about the same. It's double, 100%. The original numbers that I ran were 97%. So this company still has a very high long-term or five-year projected growth. Then this is the same kind of table that I showed you just a minute ago, projecting out 5 years. Then what I'm looking at is, okay, if I have a current price here, future price projected, if my portfolio in this case is 100,000, and again, I want to use a $5,000 allocation, means I can buy 61 shares. Long-term support is 48. I already filled that in. Never mind. So I know that with long-term support being at 48, my maximum risk, if the stock were to go all the way down to that 48 level and I didn't sell before then, is a little under $5,000 or about 5% risk to my total portfolio, not the position, the total portfolio. The future value of these shares could be worth $9,900 or almost $10,000, 98% return. Gain of basically $4,900. But more importantly, and the last thing, I mentioned this a little bit ago, one of the things that I'm looking for is, am I buying the stock at a discount? And at the very bottom here, you can see, well, currently we would be buying this stock for 13% below what it is projected or what it should be worth at sort of fair value right now. So this kind of a model can help you do three things. Start building a list of stocks to watch, forward project the value of those stocks to determine whether or not they would fit with your investing style, with your goals as an investor, and determine whether or not you are getting that stock, whether you're paying more than you should or less than you should, right? This is not going to be a model that's going to be buy the low, sell the high. This is a model where you can replicate this consistently throughout the year. Again, these numbers, obviously, as you've just seen, can change. And pull this up for 1 second. Sorry, 1 second. Typing skills. There you go. You can replicate that model. This is in a Google spreadsheet. You could do it in Excel. You can do it in numbers. All you're doing is multiplying these earnings by a forward growth rate. So I can put my same numbers in here. Earnings 207, 48. I get the same results. But this is where this is helpful at a time like this, when we still have significant uncertainty, when we still have a stock market that is unstable to volatile. This is a way to start identifying stocks that you want to buy. Maybe not today, maybe 3 months from now, maybe when the all clear sounds, but to have a plan for how to incorporate them into your portfolio from a percentage or a position size, to have an idea of how you can continue to project the growth of this company over time, meaning I don't do this once, I can do this every quarter with the stock that I own or any stock, and see what the overall impact is to the numbers. And I'm going to do this in the background, so just give me a second. I'll show you one more example or not. There you go. Thank you. Let's do a stock that's in everybody's portfolio, if you own mutual funds, at least, is Apple. So let me change this out to good old Apple. 165.79 was the close today. Forward earnings 5.95. Long-term growth rate is 8, right? 8.12. Long-term support, I looked this up earlier, it's around 129. So here's the question, here's the comp, right? Here's Apple. Apple's in everybody, basically everybody in the world has Apple in their portfolio in one way or another. But your long-term return for Apple based on current numbers is only 43%. Even though at present, you're still getting Apple at about a 7% discount, but that discount is much lower than the stock that I just showed you to. So a point of comparison when doing this kind of a simple analysis is to say, which stock really, where do I want to put my money? Which stock has the better long-term growth prospect? Now, 43% isn't bad, but over 5 years, you're looking at 7 to 8% per year, excluding dividends. So is my money better spent or is better allocated on that higher growth stock? If I'm a younger investor, it's probably better in the higher growth stock. And I may still want to have a position in Apple because it'll be stable, probably be here for another 100 years. But at the same time, if I'm a shorter term investor or an older investor, I may not want that higher growth stock. I might want the safety of Apple. In other words, you can use these model, this type of a model to help you make better decisions in your underlying trading. So the last thing that we'll go back to another screen share. Sorry. Since we were a last minute fill-in, we didn't have anything to sell. But I will tell you is if you want to follow along on all the ways that we're doing fundamental analysis, the ways that we're coming up with trade ideas for members, the analysis that we're doing on sort of the what's moving markets on a daily basis. We do have a free newsletter. We also have an app. We're in the process of updating both, but they not like they don't work, but feel free to visit us at tradersreserve.com. The right at the top of the page, you can register for our daily email newsletter. I'm sorry that I called it Filthy Rich Dirt Poor. I thought that was kind of a funny name for a newsletter, but we publish that every day, Monday through Friday. We also do special issues from time to time. I work with one of my options traders, Jeff Wood, who does the writing on that. And then we also cross publish it to our Traders Reserve app on a daily basis. So either of those will get you to the information. One thing that I'll let you know, we're doing a free trade Wednesday next week, where we're going to be looking at 0 and 1 DTE days to expiration options on the indexes and index ETFs. So if you want a free trade, live trading session, hop on the Filthy Rich Dirt Poor email list. And that's how you can get the invitation to our free trade next week. David, I'm dead bang on time.
All right. Yeah, perfect.